Welcome to the Sports Diehards on Radio AFS. I'm your host, Steve Itzkowitz. It's Monday night. It's 7:30 Pacific, and we are back after a week off. It's been a crazy couple of weeks here that I'm going to tell you a little bit about. But in the meantime, let me mention that this show is being brought to you by Gallagher's Pub and Grill, the ultimate bar and grill experience for a sports diehard. Don't believe me? Stop in there on Sunday during this NFL season, ask for Kieran, and you'll see exactly what I mean. Because at Gallagher's Bar and Grill in Long Beach, you are guaranteed to have good food, make fast friends, and enjoy your favorite team on high-definition television. Like I said, a lot going on in the past couple of weeks. We were off last week. It's been a couple of weeks where the road has called unexpectedly. Usually I plan my travels out, but in the last couple of weeks, I have traveled unexpectedly and for unexpected reasons. One good, one not so good. And it's with that that I want to begin the show by dedicating the show to my late friend, Sonia Burrell, who on October 28th, 2016, passed away from a stroke after a six-year run of an assortment of medical issues that I had no idea about. And it's kind of interesting that I'm dedicating this show to Sonia, because Sonia at one time was my call screener and occasionally contributed to the topics that we discuss here on the Sport Diehards, along with the previous Diehard Sports Radio course. And she knew sports. She came from Philadelphia, was a big Eagles fan and a Lakers fan out here out west. And she knew her stuff. She also had a great, great voice. She was a gifted writer, a very good speaker, and also a gifted cook. She made some dishes, including these cookies, that whenever she would text message me a picture, the only problem I have with it is that she was texting me something that I couldn't eat at the time that I was reading about it on a text message. It's an incredible loss, and it's a tragic loss because she was 47 years old, way too young, way too much talent. And I want to dedicate this show to her in particular, because life is about miracles. And sometimes the miracles happen and you wonder why they happen to you, and you wonder where they came from or what causes them to come about. And there was a miracle in sports that happened that no one ever thought they would see in this lifetime. It's the sports story of the year in 2016, but it's a sports story that can transcend decades of prior disappointment, prior heartbreak, leading to current triumph. And I'm talking about the Chicago Cubs run to the World Series in 2016. When you think about the run that the Cubs made, first of all, they got shut out five times during the playoffs, five times, twice in the World Series and twice against the Indians, who had them down 3-1, and twice against the Dodgers, who had them down 2-1, even down 2-1 to the Washington Nationals. They were down in each series, and when they got down, their offense really picked up. And I say that mildly, because with the Cubs, you knew it was only a matter of time until they exploded. But it seemed like they needed to fall behind for that explosion to actually happen. Sort of the cardiac kids, if you will. And so that was a very appropriate way for the Winter World Series. Even more appropriate was the fact that they did it away from Wrigley Field, where a lot of people theorize that the ongoing curse is because Wrigley Field is still where they play their home games throughout the season. An older stadium, a stadium that needs to be renovated. A lot of people would argue that the Cubs should have a new stadium built, and maybe now they will. Maybe their ownership will fork up the money to build a new stadium because they've now won a World Series and are garnering a lot of extra revenue, not to mention that they have a team, a very young team, in which the majority of their lineup are kids below the age of 25 years old that contributed mightily to this World Series winning team. Kids like Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Dexter Fowler, and then you have veterans going away like Ben Zobrist, who came over from the Tampa Bay Rays when he was managed by Joe Maddon over there, who was the World Series MVP. But they were, and Addison Russell as well, that team was driven by a lot of young stars making big, big, big contributions, including Chris Bryant, who's probably going to be MVP of the National League, which should be announced within the next week. So perhaps the Cubs now will think about building a new stadium, or they might stay at Wrigley and have it shaken this curse. But for the Cubs and the Indians to square off, the most cursed sports franchise versus the most cursed sports town, and for the Cleveland Indians to have a chance to win a World Series after the Cleveland Cavaliers upset the Golden State Warriors to win the NBA Finals earlier this year, there's your sports story right there. The sports story of the year is redemption in the Midwest. Redemption of a city that is the most cursed city in sports in Cleveland. Redemption of a franchise that for 108 years was lusting after a World Series and finally got one, and got one in the most dramatic way. Overcoming deficits in each series, including a 3-1 deficit against the Cleveland Indians, who looked like they had the series won easily until the Cubs bats woke up after they fell down 3-1 to an upstart Cleveland Indians team that didn't have all of its players available. They were missing Salazar. They were missing Carrasco. Despite that, and despite the brilliant managing of Terry Francona, the Indians could not take care of the Cubs, could not put them away when they had three opportunities to do so, two of which were at Progressive Field in Cleveland, and the Chicago Cubs just pulled it out. But that's what adds to this being the sports story of the year. So with all due respect to the NFL and college football, that has seen plenty, with Peyton Manning going out as a Super Bowl winner, winning his second. And obviously, you know, the Cleveland Cavaliers winning the NBA Finals, overcoming a 3-1 deficit themselves. Ironically, Cleveland overcame a 3-1 deficit in the NBA, but couldn't make a 3-1 deficit turn into a win in baseball. It's the redemption of the Midwest, because when it comes to media, when it comes to sport, when it comes to everything in this country, everything is driven by the coast. Obviously, the East Coast and then the Gold Coast here on the West Coast, which often people refer to as the best coast. But I digress. That's the real sports story of the year, and it's all around a couple of cities with a team and a city and a sports history that has been anything but glorious until recently. So it's kind of nice in a year that has been contentious, coming off the contentious presidential election and some of the contentiousness that has occurred since the presidential election, with people protesting left and right over the election of Donald Trump as the 45th president of the United States of America. And I'm not going to go into that tonight. I'm not here to make statements about it. It is what it is. He is the president of the United States, and no protest is going to change that. So I'm not going to go into a long harangue about that for the simple fact, and he's not my guy, believe me. But at the end of the day, this is why we have sports. This is why this story of Chicago and the Chicago Cubs and the city of Cleveland, to me, makes what happened in the presidential election worthwhile. And we're going to have moments like that in sports again, where we are going to have an opportunity to celebrate individuals, teams, organizations, and cities being knocked down and getting up to experience triumph. That's how life works. America will overcome this contentious election process before the election occurred and after, but what is going to remain, what is going to stick in our hearts and our minds forever, is what happened between the Cubs and the Indians, and what happened in the city of Chicago and the city of Cleveland, a couple of cities desperate for a championship. Being here in LA, I've seen my fair share of championships, and I'm sure I'll see more with the Lakers. The Dodgers even had a great shot of getting to the World Series to win it this year. They were great in these playoffs under Dave Roberts. They just ran into a buzzsaw in the Cubs that just wasn't going to be stopped. So it wasn't the Dodgers' year, but the Dodgers have a great shot of potentially getting back to the World Series mountaintop, a place they haven't been since 1988, which compared to the Cubs seems like a walk in the park. Seems like just yesteryear. It seems like the time has flown by, but not for the Cubs. It has been a slow, torturous process. And the Dodgers can find themselves there in the next couple of years if and when the Cubs tail off, or maybe some of their better players start going elsewhere. But there's a lot to celebrate in the world of sports, and there's a lot to celebrate in the world of life. And there's a lot of people that have touched my life, including one Sonia Burrell. I wish she was on the show right now so that we can talk about the Eagles and sports in general and have that beautiful radio voice that she has, just gracing the airwaves here, giving you listeners a thrill more so than having to listen to my voice. But she's not, but she's very much here in spirit. Last week, I flew out to New York. Ironically, on the night of the election, I flew out to New York to give a presentation to Chinese national businessmen and business people at the DoubleTree Hotel in Manhattan, New York, on leadership in the United States. And I talk about a marathon mentality, which is a better way to do business than business based on instant gratification, what I call 7-Eleven business. Walk in, get what you want, walk out, easy breezy, everything is done quickly. But that's not how good business works. So I talked about the marathon mentality with this group. I talked about conflict resolution. I talked about how leadership in an uber-competitive environment like the United States business marketplace is oh so important, that the marathon mentality was a big highlight of it. And that's how it is in sports. That's how it is in sports. That's what the Lakers are going through right now, trying to reemerge as a championship-caliber franchise. I'm going to talk about them in a moment and why I'm not quite ready to declare them a playoff team just yet, despite the fact that they are off to a much better-than-expected start. We'll also get into NFL Week 10, and we're also going to get into college football and why who's ranked 2, 3, and 4 in the college football playoff rankings doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, and I'll explain why I feel that way momentarily. And take out the drama of some of that, because at the end of the day, there's only one team we're talking about. And I'll mention who that team is and why they're going to be the national championship after this season, regardless of number 2, 3, and 4 in the college football playoff rankings that will be coming out tomorrow. But when you're involved in sports in any way, shape, or form, you appreciate the journey on the way to an ideal destination. And the destiny and the journey of sports this year, with what we saw with the Cubs and the city of Cleveland, and what's going on with the Lakers right now, and a great game last night between the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks, a Super Bowl rematch that the Seahawks got a little bit of revenge on by beating the Patriots in Foxborough. This is what sports is all about, and this is what life is all about. What brings us together, what brings us joy, what entertains us. Not about who the President of the United States is. Not even about business. It's what we can do for each other. And the Sport Diehards, we just want to give you a show tonight of honest opinions, some funny content, as I can generate it, sports stories that are both inspire and inform. And just have a good time. And we invite you to have a good time with us. So if you want to call in, go ahead and call in at 646-668-8467 and enter one. We'd love to have you as part of the discussions here. But at the end of the day, the sports story of the year is redemption in the Midwest, with a franchise in a city previously disenfranchised, now on top and having a great chance to win championships again in the future, because that Indians team is not going anywhere. As long as they're managed by Terry Francona, with the talent they have in place with Corey Kluber and Francisco Lindor, came up big in these playoffs this year, along with some of the guys who could get back like Carrasco and Salazar, not to mention having Andrew Miller in tow, who they traded for from the Yankees. And even these are not going anywhere, and the Cavaliers might very well repeat as champions this year. It would not surprise me if it happens. And then you have the Chicago Cubs, who are positioned to be good for at least the next couple of years, if they can keep the team together and if they don't get complacent and get satisfied with this particular championship, because they can win it again. They can be the first team since the Big Red Machine of the 1970s, the Cincinnati Reds, with Pete Rose, Tony Perez, Johnny Bench and company, and Sparky Anderson when he was the manager, a pretty good manager in his own right, winning World Series with the Cincinnati Reds and the Detroit Tigers. Joe Maddon has that kind of managing ability and has got a great team. So it would not surprise me if the Chicago Cubs team goes on to a level of success that's the Cincinnati Reds with a big red machine generated in the 1970s, right around the time that I was born. So I was able to watch those teams live, but I'll tell you, one of the videos that I saw, those are great, great teams, and the Cubs certainly have that kind of ability, and they play in the Midwest. You know, a place that needs its fair share of sports color, like we've gotten on the West and East Coast time and time again, with franchises like the Lakers, like the New England Patriots, the New York Giants, And the Golden State Warriors recently going to back-to-back finals and winning one and nearly winning another one. So it's nice to see a little glory in an area of the country that is often overlooked. And I'm not just talking about when people fly from the West Coast to the East Coast, flying over the Midwest on their way to someplace back east or possibly out here on the left coast. So congratulations to the Cubs and to the Cleveland Indians and the city of Cleveland. You have plenty of reasons to hold your head high. And in my opinion, the 2016 Sports Story of the Year is redemption in the Midwest with a baseball franchise and a sports city overcoming years of misery, torture to experience some triumph this year. It's a great story. It should be celebrated by just about every American, regardless of whether the election went the way they wanted to or not. I'm going to come back in a few minutes here. And coming up next, why the number 2, number 3, number 4 slots in the top 4 for the college football playoff rankings don't mean anything in the grand scheme of things for schools like Clemson, Michigan, Washington, Louisville, or the Ohio State University. That's coming up next. In the meantime, check out I Believe in a Thing Called Love by The Darkness. We'll be back on the Sport Diehards. This is Radio AFS. You're listening to the Sport Diehards with your host, Steve Etzkowitz. Don't go anywhere. To the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS, and I owe the audience an apology because I was just ranting and raving on why the number 2, number 3, and number 4 rankings in the college football playoff rankings don't matter, but I was muted the whole time because I forgot to take myself off mute. So I'm going to bring back that particular segment. Coming up next, why declaring the Lakers a playoff team at this point is a tad too soon to do so. Want to get into that because they're off to a better than expected start so far this year, better than I expected, but not quite ready to declare them a playoff team. I will explain why in the next second. In the meantime, over the weekend, college football had its by far most unpredictable and upsetting weekend with three of the four college football playoff ranked teams losing. Michigan losing along with Clemson and Washington. Therefore, we're looking at a shakeup there. Will Louisville finally get into the top four, having had a really great year and a lot of people seeing them getting snubbed out of the top four. Can they make it in there now with so many losses amongst the current top four coming in this week? Those rankings will be announced tomorrow. Will Michigan survive and stay in the top four because of strength of schedule in the conference they play in, which I would view as the best so far this year, the Big Ten? It's been absolutely low. It's been absolutely good. Will Washington fall out of the top four? I'm going to say yes. Will Ohio State get back into the top four, a place that they've seemingly been since the college football playoff system began, especially when Urban Meyer returned and led them to a national championship a couple of years ago in the inaugural edition of the college football playoff? I see Alabama being number one. That's a given. Ohio State, Michigan, and Louisville, to me, will be the top four, with Clemson falling off. Because Clemson at times is low. Clemson has not been very consistent this year. They only have one loss, but easily could have two or three. They started the season very, very slowly because Deshaun Watson decided he wanted to show more. He wanted to prove that he's more of a pocket passer than an athletic quarterback that could do it all. Came in with the wrong mindset. Seemingly that's been righted lately. He's playing really, really well, and he's being who he is, and there's nothing wrong with that. If you're an athletic quarterback, use your athleticism. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You should use what you have to make you successful. That's what Deshaun Watson should do, and he's been doing that lately. But Clemson, to me, doesn't feel like championship material this year because it doesn't seem like they have the same edge that they played with last year. It seems like they lost a little bit after losing to Alabama in the second national championship game of the college football playoff. So that's a flawed team in terms of mindset, not to mention that defensively, I think they are not quite as good as they were last year. Then you have Washington. Washington, I know, Chris Peterson has got his footprint, he's got his thumbprints all over that program now, especially offensively. He has proven that he can take a system from Boise State and translate that into the Big 12 in which there is a very good chance that they will win the Pac-12 this year and go to the Rose Bowl, a place that they haven't been in a day's age. Certainly a place they haven't gone to recently because of the emergence of Stanford and Oregon. Well, Stanford is a good team, not great, and Oregon is having a bad year as we can remember in recent memory. They've been great for several years now. But this year, they're seemingly come crashing back down to earth, especially since Marcus Mariota went to the NFL after winning the Heisman. So it's Washington's conference to take, at least the Pac-12 North. But they got some competition from USC that showed that with Sam Darnold under center and a reinvigorated defense and some very, very solid wide receiver play from Darius Rogers, USC's for real. And with how they took it to Washington up in Seattle and how easily they won that game, 26-13, in which they effectively dominated, I don't see Washington as championship caliber either. Therefore, they fall into the top four. It's not really going to matter because, to me, they don't have the physicality on defense, especially to really hang with an Alabama or an Ohio State or even a Michigan. And then we get to Louisville. Louisville under Bobby Petrino, very, very excited offensively. Bobby Petrino may be the best head coach in college football as far as offense would go. I mean, offensively, his teams are always, always, always explosive and highly, highly effective. They're number one in total offense so far this year, which is no small feat. Ahead of Ohio State, teams like Ohio State and Alabama. Alabama averaging 41 points a game, which is scary, and I'll talk more about them in a second. But, again, can Louisville hang defensively with a team that can bring it offensively themselves, but also a team that can hang offensively themselves, but also have the ability to play a high-caliber physical defense like an Alabama can? I'm going to say no. But do they deserve to be in the top four? Absolutely. Absolutely. They should be in the top four, and they should get that opportunity if they can run the table for the rest of the year. And then Michigan. I don't mind the Michigan loss to Iowa. Michigan proved they can win a physical game with a team like Wisconsin 14-7, but they also proved that they can win in blowouts. They are averaging so far this year 44.5 points per game, but they're only giving up less than 13 points a game. They have done it on both sides of the ball, and Jim Harbaugh, everywhere he goes, every team he touches turns to gold. You might think he's a pain, might be tough to deal with in terms of his in-your-face coaching style, but he gets it done. And that's all you can say. He's getting it done in Michigan. I know the Michigan loves who love to back their own people. And Harbaugh's a Michigan man. They love what's going on in Ann Arbor. If Harbaugh is smart, he will stay there for the rest of his career and try to win national championships over there if and when they can figure out the Ohio State puzzle. And if and when Alabama maybe starts to take a step back from the dominant run they've been on for years now under Nick Saban. But I don't mind their loss against Iowa because the Big Ten is a really, really good conference from top to bottom. It's been the best in college football this year, in my opinion. With the SEC and the Pac-12, it's been a dog-eat-dog conference in that. The ranking of those teams is more to do with the conference that they play in rather than the quality of the team, because when you're a Florida and you go on the road against an unranked team and you lose, or if you're a Tennessee and you go on the road against an unranked team and you lose, that just proves that the ranking is more to do with your conference and how good your team is. And that's how it's been with the SEC and the Pac-12 and the Pac-12 this year. It's a lot of dog-eat-dog. And with Washington losing against USC, Washington, to me, was going to have to run the table to get into the college football playoff. With their loss now and the fact that USC has too many losses, Stanford is good but not great, and Oregon is well down from the level that they've been operating at for the past 5 years or so. I should say 6 years. It doesn't feel like they're going to have a representative in the college football playoff. The Big Ten should, as long as the team with only one loss on Ohio State or Michigan, possibly Wisconsin, that has certainly had a very, very good year themselves. And Iowa, even though they're a run-ranked team, always plays very, very well, especially in the Big Ten at home. It feels like Louisville should get there if they run the table. Alabama should absolutely be there if they come out of the SEC. They're the best team in college football right now. And I would say Ohio State or Michigan out of the Big Ten, Louisville, Alabama, and perhaps Clemson if they run the table for the rest of the year. But this leads me to the argument that I want to make about why who's ranked number 2, 3, and 4 as of tomorrow's poll doesn't really matter. Because Alabama is just too damn good. They're averaging 41 points a game. And they only give up 12.2 points a game. It's a blowout every single game with them. And some will say, well, they're not battle-tested. They're well-coached, though, by Nick Saban. And if Nick Saban has any time to prepare for an opponent whatsoever, he is going to be able to maximize that. They are big, they are physical, and they are skilled. They're a prototypical football team. And even though the prospect of Alabama playing extra games throughout the year means having to be subjected to more Nick Saban press conferences, which I'm not a fan of because Nick Saban, as successful as he's been, is very abrasive, berates the media, is condescending to the umpteenth degree. I hate his press conferences. He can't even answer a legitimate question without some sarcastic remark or some challenging remark. Can't even show gratitude for the high-level success he's been. He competes at every single frame. Doesn't seem to know when to turn off the competition when to turn off the competition switch. Competes in everything, even with the media. And to me, it's kind of ridiculous. But he is the best coach in college football right now, and he's got the best team. And to me, whoever's ranked number 2, 3, and 4 in tomorrow's poll doesn't matter. Because unless Alabama has key injuries or they start getting full of themselves to where they believe that all I have to do to win is to show up, then you might be able to have it, because certainly you'll play hard if you're playing against Alabama. You have no choice but to do so. But if Alabama is focused and they use the combination of their power, size, and skill to do what they do, I don't think Clemson – Ohio State University, Washington, Louisville, or Michigan have a shot in hell of taking Alabama out if they're playing the way they're capable of and they are focused. It's just that simple. So people could scream, so if Michigan is still in the top four tomorrow, people believe it shouldn't be there because they lost to Iowa, just remember that it doesn't matter. If Clemson is in the top four, still in the top four at the end of the year, just remember, it doesn't matter. If Louisville finally gets to the top four, a place they absolutely deserve to be, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because Alabama is head and shoulders above everybody else. Offensively and defensively, they dominate. And there's no reason to believe that that is going to change between now and the college football playoff in about 6 weeks. If I'm wrong, I'll be more than happy to admit it, because I'm not rooting for Alabama by any stretch of the imagination. I'd rather see Michigan win it or I'd rather see a big Pac-12 team try to get in there, but I don't think that's going to happen. So in no way is this me endorsing Michigan as a fan of what they're doing. I'm not a fan of Saban. I hope they lose, and I hope Saban goes out early so we don't have to endure any more of those ridiculous press conferences of his. But in being objective and seeing things for how they are, Alabama's the best team. And chances are they're going to be hoisting that trophy at the end of the year. We'll see what happens. One team that has scored some trophies so far this year in terms of how they played is the Los Angeles Lakers. Off to a 6-5 start, coming off a 2-1 road trip against teams that are also-rans in the NBA, if you will. Kind of like the SEC with Alabama and the also-rans. The Lakers beat a lot of also-rans on this road trip, taking out Sacramento, overcoming a 19-point deficit in the process, dominating New Orleans and losing to Minnesota, who's a good young team themselves, when the Lakers lost by 28. A lot of people beating the playoff drum about the Lakers, which to me is a little bit premature. Now, I will admit, and I'm a Lakers fan, that they are off to a much better than expected start. For them to have a winning record this late in the season, coming off the last couple of years that have been flat out torturous, I am delighted at the Lakers' start to this season. There's no question about it. But in no way am I going to confuse my delight with the Lakers' start with them being a playoff team. I wouldn't say that just yet. They have – here's their schedule this week. They have the Brooklyn Nets tomorrow. So long as they're not getting full of themselves and they learn from the loss against Minnesota, which D'Angelo Russell said they don't like feeling that way, the way they did after that loss, they should take out Brooklyn tomorrow. Brooklyn's terrible. But then they have the Spurs on Friday. They have the Bulls on Sunday. Then they have the Thunder. Then they have Golden State in a home-and-home back-to-back, having already beat Golden State so far this year. If the Lakers – okay, put it this way. They should beat the Nets tomorrow. If they beat the Spurs on Friday, if they beat the Thunder, I think they could beat the Bulls. But the Spurs would be a tall order, the Thunder a tall order with Russell Westbrook. And certainly facing the Warriors on a home and home, in which you're going to have to go to Oracle Arena up in Oakland. If they win three, if they can beat Golden State at least once in that home and home, the Thunder and San Antonio, I'm going to start to believe that they are worthy of playoff chat. I will. Because those are really good teams. And that's why we don't want to declare the Lakers a playoff team just yet. Because even though they've had a lot of road games to begin the season here, which is a little unusual for the Lakers, usually it's a home-heavy schedule to begin the year, they really haven't faced a what I would call a scary team outside of Golden State. They beat Houston to begin the year. They dominated Golden State. That is a quality win. That's their signature victory so far this year, like it was last season when they beat the Warriors by 17 and the Lakers' worst season as a franchise from a win total perspective was 17. That was one of the 17 that they got. But if they can win against San Antonio, Oklahoma City, in one of those games against Golden State, then I think talks of the playoffs are legit at that point. Because it's not like this team is going to get worse. They're only going to get better. And I got to say, how Luke Walton is handling this team, how he's identifying matchups that favor the Lakers, how he's established a five-man rotation off the bench, meaning the Lakers essentially have two starting lineups, and how he's been able to match up with these teams and how he's gotten these guys to focus. They are number one against three-point shooting right now, number one. And they are third in offense and third in free throw attempts right now. They are a good young team. They're playing very well together. And Julius Randle and Jordan Clarkson so far have been absolutely phenomenal, along with Lou Williams. D'Angelo Russell has struggled at times, but he'll start to pick it up. And Brandon Ingram is coming along very nicely as well, along with Timofey Mozgov, proved to be very, very, very valuable in what he's contributing. We'd like to see more from Luol Deng, but he'll come around. But this Lakers team right now, with how they play defense against three-point shooting teams like Golden State, and how they're able to get to the free throw line, they're being a really good team right now. They're doing what good teams do. But I want to see them do it against some of the heavyweights, the Golden States, the San Antonios, the Oklahoma Cities, Cleveland eventually, the Clippers. So Lord knows the Clippers have had the Lakers' number lately. But if you start knocking those teams off, then talks of the Lakers being a playoff team are completely legit to me, but I wouldn't go there just yet. I'd be happy with the good start, and I look forward to seeing what this team can accomplish next. And we'll leave it at that. We have a few minutes left here. I would usually take a commercial break at this point, but I'm going to go ahead and go on here. Got to get to the NFL. Week 10 in the books. Seattle takes out New England. And, you know, I had New England winning that game because all the talk I heard over the week was Seattle will be tired coming off the Monday night game against Arizona and then having to travel back east. Forgot about the revenge factor coming into this game. And don't tell me, and Seattle might deny it, or maybe they won't, because they're a very emotional, prideful team. I will bet you that that Super Bowl loss and how they lost was on their minds in that game, and they used that as fuel to play in a game under very adverse circumstances, again, flying back east against the top team in the AFC and coming off a Monday night victory that was very controversial. Give them credit. And right now, with Minnesota taking a tail dive, the Dallas Cowboys and the Seattle Seahawks appear to be on a collision course for the NFC Championship game. I remember when Dallas a couple years ago went into Seattle and won 26-21 when Romo was a starting quarterback. And now we have Dak Prescott, who, believe it or not, is showing an ability similar to what Russell Wilson has shown, a guy that can make plays with his legs, buy time, and get the job done, even though he's not the biggest guy, doesn't have the strongest arm. Does it sound familiar? Sound like Russell Wilson? It'd be interesting if those two square off in the NFC Championship game. At this point, there's a very good chance that that will happen because those are the top two teams in the NFC right now as far as I'm concerned. I'm not buying Atlanta. I'm not buying anyone for the NFC South, especially New Orleans. They're not good enough defensively. Minnesota has nosedove because of their offensive line issues and not having Adrian Peterson is hurt. Not to mention they're missing Teddy Bridgewater, even though Bradford has played reasonably well. They could use Bridgewater right now. He's more mobile given those offensive line issues. So it was a big, big victory for Seattle going into New England, getting a little bit of revenge, but also establishing that they are ready to potentially make another Super Bowl run after a lot of people bury them because of their offensive line issues. But their issues on the offensive line are not nearly as bad as Seattle. Nearly as bad as Minnesota, or the Rams for that matter. And that's another thing I want to react to about Week 10. The Rams beat the Jets 9-6. In which that game was the ugliest game of the year, about as ugly as Louisiana State, Alabama, a couple of years ago, you recall, that regular season game that Louisiana State won 9-6 before Alabama got revenge against him in the SEC title game. And the story is that Goff didn't play a game and that Case Keenum was average. Jeff Fisher has been a head coach in the NFL since the mid-90s. He's had quarterbacks like Steve McNair in his stable. Nick Foles, Sam Bradford. Although he didn't draft Sam Bradford. But there's been one common denominator of Jeff Fisher. Aside from the fact that he's mostly had mediocre years, he's only had 5 winning seasons as a head coach. Everything else has been a bunch of 7-9s, 8-8s, 6-10, stuff like that. A lot of 7-9s. Hence his remark, enough of the 7-9 crap that he made during Hard Knocks during the offseason when the Rams returned to Los Angeles. That common denominator is there, but there's also a common denominator that is he doesn't start rookie quarterbacks. And chances are that's going to be the case this year. He's got an offensive line that has proven to be a bit porous. Greg Robinson, the number 2 draft pick a year ago, has been an absolute bust so far. And Todd Gurley can't run the football to save his life. You at least like to have the running game effective if you're going to put Goff in there. But Fisher doesn't start rookie quarterbacks. There's two types of players in the NFL, rookie players and everybody else. And if you're a rookie playing on Jeff Fisher's team and you're a quarterback especially, you're not going to start. Could that change? Sure. I don't know what the Rams are going to do. They might decide to start Keenum once they are out of the playoff picture permanently. Even though their win against the Jets does not eliminate them from the playoffs entirely, they're a mediocre football team that can't run. They're not scary offensively. I mean, they needed 9 points to beat the Jets, and the Jets are worse offensively than the Rams are with, you know, now they're starting Bryce Petty over Ryan Fitzpatrick because Fitzpatrick can't seem to avoid throwing interceptions. Case Keenum is number 2 in the league in interceptions, yet the Rams continue to start him. And they're going to continue to start him because they believe he's their best chance to win. We hear that each week. Well, apparently it's their best chance to win 4 times in their first 9 games, which means they'll probably get 2 or 3 more wins this year, be out of the playoffs yet again for for what seems like an eternity. But that's how it goes. So, to me, the Rams have not completely been honest about the situation whatsoever. And that this is a transition year. The team went through a lot just to move to Los Angeles. It's a mediocre team. And Goff's time is probably going to be next year where they can retool the offensive line, hire a new offensive coordinator, and Fisher finally probably being on the hot seat. I like he's not on the hot seat this year because Stan Clark is taking into account the move from St. Louis to Los Angeles. So don't look for Fisher to be out. Don't look for Goff to play. Really, money time for the Rams begins next season. And money time for the Sport That Hurts is over as we're about 30 seconds away from wrapping up the show here. I want to thank you very much for listening in. We will be back next Monday at 7:30 p.m. to talk NFL Week 11, see what the college football player brings, and continue to track the progress of the Lakers and the NBA. And whatever else may happen in sport this week, I hope you're over your post-election fatigue somehow, and that you enjoy some very exciting sporting action coming up. You've listened to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. I'm your host, Steve Vesco. We've been brought to you by Gallagher's, and we're out.